questions before we go on? Pastor Shank, anything else you can think of? Ah, thanks. All right, let's go to Genesis 37. Genesis 37, and we looked at some preliminary things about Joseph's life. And in looking at Joseph's life, there were some observations that we've already made that lay some groundwork for what's going to happen to him. Most people know the overall picture of Joseph. Most people who've studied the Bible could give you a pretty good overview of the story. In the first two verses, let's go ahead and read those. Jacob dwelt in the land wherein his father was a stranger, in the land of Canaan. These are the generations of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brethren, and the lad was with the sons of Bilhah, and with the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. And Joseph brought unto his father their evil report. That word evil simply means bad. He brought back to his father a bad report about his brothers. Now, we've learned a couple of things about Joseph already. This was the last slide that we put up when we studied last Wednesday. We learned that Joseph is 17 years old, so he is an older teenager. His occupation, he is a shepherd. He is at the basic level as a shepherd. He's not an accomplished shepherd, so he's still learning his task. And we learn that he is somewhat nobler than his brothers and probably more spiritual in his demeanor because of the report that he brings back to his father. Verses 3 and 4 begin to introduce some problems. Let's go back to that. Now Israel, and that is Jacob's name now, Israel loved Joseph more than all his children because he was the son of his old age. And he made him a coat of many colors. And when his brethren saw that their father loved him more than all his brethren, they hated him and could not speak peaceably unto him. All right, in the family, we already have major problems. What were the major problems in Joseph's family already? All right, jealousy. Among the brothers? The wives, plural. Yeah, remember, that's the whole family that has, you know, he's planning to marry Rachel, and he ends up married to Leah. And so even though he's married to Leah, he marries Rachel. And then when Rachel can't have children, he marries the midwife or the servant girl, Zilpah, and then Bilhah, or Bilhah and then Zilpah. And so he ends up with four wives and kids, and there's just a battle going on all the time. Well, now to complicate things, he has a son that he has demonstrative favoritism toward. And it's obvious. He makes him a coat of many colors. It says that he loved him most of all his sons. Boy, that puts him in an awkward spot. Here's a teenager who is loved by his father more than his other, more than his brothers. And it says that he made him a long-sleeved cloak. Now, you say, well, that's not what it says. It says a coat of many colors. What it says is it made him a unique coat. And if you look at the various ways to translate that, it could be a coat of many colors. It could be a very colored tunic. It could be a richly ornamented robe. What I have here is made him a long-sleeved cloak is actually Leupold's commentary. When he does this literal translation, that's how he translates it. We actually don't know what it looked like. You see pictures of it that it was just a brightly striped robe. Could have been that. We really don't know. It was usually a sleeveless undergarment or tunic, one person said. It was long-sleeved and extended to the ankles. And the problem was it was not suitable for a working man. The working men would have a shorter thing that was pulled up and girded their loins for work. This was given to somebody who was going to be an overseer rather than a laborer. It identified him as hierarchy rather than one who was going to get down in the ditch and dig. His brothers didn't like that very well. He's younger. Luther says this. He says, I do not know what the term means, but the father wished to designate the son as the ruler. Ruling class colors were more brilliant. And so whatever the coat looked like, it is clear that his father was favoring him by giving him this garment and was setting him apart from his brothers in a way that eventually was going to be destructive, because there's dissension in the family. Because of the favoritism, it is observable. His sons had already forfeited, two of his sons had already forfeited their position as leaders, and they evidenced bitterness as a result of their own decisions. Remember, Reuben had incest with his father's wife, and then Simeon and Levi, their cruelty to back in chapter 37. And so you've got problems that are already there, but the hatred was obvious to Joseph. It says that they hated him. They weren't able to speak peaceably to him. Well, that sounds like a fun family, doesn't it? Got four wives who can't get along most of the time. Then you've got sons now who can't get along, and they hate each other. This is not a nice word. They literally hate each other. And Dad at some point seems oblivious to the fact that he's causing a lot of the problem. And as parents, there is a great deal for us to learn here in this passage. While there are things that we'll like better about certain children, you've got to be extremely careful about showing favoritism that is not only going to destroy the ones you don't favor, but the one you do favor. You have to treat them equally. And you have to be very careful about what you do. Joseph then has some dreams. And in these dreams, he relates them, and the hatred and the jealousy increases. So let's go back and read about these dreams. Verse 5. Joseph dreamed a dream, and he told his brethren, and they hated him yet more. In verse 6, he said unto them, "Hear, I pray you, this dream which I have dreamed. For behold, we were binding sheaves in the field, and lo, my sheaf arose, and also stood upright or erect, and behold, your sheaves stood round about, they gathered round about, and made obeisance to my sheaf." And his brothers said unto him, "Shalt thou indeed reign over us? Or shalt thou indeed have dominion over us?" And they hated him yet with the more for his dreams and for his words. All right, now what's a sheaf? All right, shock of wheat is what is generally pictured. It is wheat that's taken and bundled together, and it kind of stands, and his stood upright. I mean, very tall. And the others gathered round him and bowed. Well, now, if you're one of the brothers, how do you respond to that? Gary, you have several children. How would that go over with your children? I only have two siblings, and if one of them came to me and said, "Hey, you're going to bow down to me. Only if you can stand up when I'm done beating on you." This doesn't go over real well. Verse 9, and he dreamed yet again, yet another dream, and told his brethren, and said, "Behold, I have dreamed a dream more, and behold, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars made obeisance to me." They were bowing down to me. This is the sun, the moon, and the stars. And he told it to his father and to his brethren, and his father rebuked him and said unto him, "What is this dream that thou hast dreamed? Shall I and thy mother and thy brethren indeed come and bow down ourselves to thee and to the earth?" And his brethren envied, or they were jealous of him. And his father observed the saying, or he kept the saying in mind, is the idea there. Here's the second dream. This time he comes and says, "Hey, guys, I had another dream." And this time, the sun, the moon, all the stars, they were bowing down to me. Boy, that adds to the love. And obviously it says they were jealous, they hated him. There was just a real bad spirit in this. I want you just to briefly comment on this with me and think this through. Did Joseph sin in what he did here? This is a big question that comes up. If Joseph ever is recorded to have sinned, this would be it in this passage. Let me point out a couple of things here. Go back to verse 2 and you'll see that he gave a bad or evil report about his brethren. There are many commentators and students who believe that that was a second-hand report, that this was not a first-hand report, that he was taking the words of people as he had checked on his brothers, and so it was not necessarily personal observation. And then in verses 5 and in verse 9, it says that he told his brothers, he related to his brothers the dreams that he had. What possible infractions are present in this account? In other words, if he sinned, how did he sin? All right, pride and arrogance. I think that's the first thing that jumps out here, is that you've got pride and arrogance. And I simply put down an empowered 17-year-old. How many 17-year-olds do we have in here? Who's 17? I can't see whose arm it is. Mandy. Mandy. Can you imagine Mandy? She's back there shaking her head. Yeah. Okay, all right. What else? What other... What other infractions or sin is possibly observable in this passage? Michael? Yeah, if it is a secondhand report, then you know we have a problem there. Depending on how he was reporting it. I mean, he could come and say, Dad, you know, as I went through, these guys were saying that. I didn't see it, I don't know. But I thought you ought to be aware. Okay. So you can argue both ways. All right, what else? Any others? Val? Discretion. What other word could we put in there? All right, immaturity. Proverbs. Wisdom. Just wisdom. And I put down here for this that here's a guy with a real lack of discernment, but is it a sin? I don't know. Here's a naive 17-year-old. Mandy is extremely brilliant and calm and level-headed. But she's 17. She hasn't been through some things in life. Now, I know that when we were 17, we all understood that. But being now 47, I see a couple of things I possibly didn't know at 17. And here's a 17-year-old who's been empowered, and God has let him have these dreams, and God has let him have this father who has channeled this naivety and this pride. And now God puts him in this place where he has to decide how to deal with this. And really the bottom line is he doesn't deal with it very well. As Valerie said, he already knew his brothers hated him. Why then, and that's why I put those two verses up there, verses 5 and verse 9, why then go and tell your brothers this? What do you think they're going to do? Gary? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 You know, it is interesting to me that even his father rebuked him. And I don't know, I've got it as the last thing on the slide. I don't think we can settle this, but I would come to this conclusion that I can't say for sure. I am not convinced that it was sin in the sense of him setting out to do something wrong. I think you have a 17-year-old who has been empowered by his father. And if you go to the New Testament, what do you have when you have a novice in a position in church? Lest he fall, you know, through pride. Even in church, we're still told, don't take somebody who's a new believer and put him in a position of leadership because you're going to destroy him. And that's exactly what you have with Joseph. He's been given a position that is going to destroy him by what he has. Kim? Mm-hmm. And you bring up a good point. And I think something else is, was it wrong for him to tell it? There you go. If I came to you and said, I had a dream and all you peons are going to bow down to me. You coming back to the next service? But if instead I got a couple of men, spiritual advisors together and said, I need you to pray with me about something because I'm not sure what to do here. The Lord has burdened me and I had this dream and I don't know how to interpret it. And what happened was that in my dream, we were out in the field and this sheaf came and then the other sheaf gathered around and bowed to it. Guys, I don't know what that means. Does that give you a different spirit? Sure does. If he goes to his dad and says, Dad, I need some wisdom from you. I need a little help. I had this other dream and it didn't go so well when I told my brothers. I want to tell you what the dream was and you tell me what to do with it. A lot of humility there. But it would seem that what he did was he marched up and didn't mind telling them that the Lord planned for them to bow down to him. And here is the picture that we have of Joseph. And I think, I want to start with this, that these things are open to some interpretation here, but I believe the picture that is being painted for us in these first 10 verses is not of a young man who is in, it's verse 11 verses, but it's not of a young man who is in willful disobedience. I don't even think it's a young man who is in willful pride. You have to understand what I mean by that. I don't think that here's a guy who has just sat around and exalted himself and thinks wonderfully of himself. I think he's in an environment that has created that in him, and I believe that is something he has to learn to deal with. And I think that his circumstances growing up are such that they have left the door open for that kind of pride and arrogance. It's been fostered by his father. And being fostered by his father, it is certainly sinful, but a naive 17-year-old is not going to know how to deal with that. It really is kind of a sad situation when you look at it. Because it's a home that is not doing a good job spiritually. There are all kinds of surface problems, and they're beginning to grow now and bloom in the children. And you see that all the way through Jacob's sons, that the root of the problems are now coming out and, boy, they're just pouring forth. And I believe what you have is a young man who is not willfully disobedient, but I believe he is, as a product of his environment, disobedient, arrogant, and sinful in his pride and enjoying this too much. And I believe there's a naive young man who needs to be put in his place. And so what is God going to do? He's going to take care of that. And if that picture that I have is correct, what a lesson. When we look at Joseph at the end, he's going to look at his brothers and say, guys, you meant it for evil. God meant it for good. What would he have said at 17? Bring the guillotine. We got some chopping to do. God humbled him. God took him through exactly the circumstances he needed in order to bring him to a place that he was useful to God. And God does that in our lives. And whether it's from the time we look back and at 17, God knew some of the things that I would need to go through in order to get me to the place that I am, in order to at least be partially usable to him. And God is still doing that every moment of our lives. And so as we put that picture of Joseph out there, at the beginning, all of these things that follow, while they're very difficult for him to go through, I think God has a definite purpose in doing that. He's going to make him usable by the circumstances that he faces. And here's the foundation of all of that. What we're going to do from here on is obviously he's going to, in this chapter, be sold into slavery, end up in a place he doesn't want to be, where nobody is bowing down to him to begin with. And then God is gradually going to teach him some tremendous leadership principles. All right, let's stop there this evening. And we'll pass our prayer sheet out and then be finished shortly. Let's bow for prayer. Father, thank you for the Scripture. And Lord, so often in Genesis, you have opened the window to people's lives and allowed us to see the character that they have. And Lord, in these things, we often see the characteristics that we mimic. Lord, I pray that you'll help us to learn from these. They're examples that you give to us, and through them we can be refined without having to go through some of the difficulties that they went through. Lord, I pray that if perhaps there is a young person in here that has that kind of pride, that you would break that, and that you would help them to see without the same difficulties how you are sovereign in our lives. Thank you for your kindness. In Jesus' name, amen.